I love to cook. It's a natural progression from the fact that I love to eat. So I wanted to have a hand in choosing what we were eating, and if you're going to be picky, you better be the one making it. I found out that I enjoyed it. I like cooking, creating things from ingredients, mixing flavors, discovering secrets. As a cook, I have what is called a food triangle. It's three ingredients that I rely on quite often to form the basis of the meals that I enjoy. For me, my food triangle is onions and garlic and mushrooms. I use those three quite often to create dishes, whether they be Mexican or Chinese or Italian. These three ingredients can inform and begin many of my creations. But you know, sometimes I want to get away from what I know. I want to stray beyond my safe familiarities. Try something new, something different, something I haven't tried before. So I go out and I find a recipe. I am a recipe user. I find a recipe that sounds good and I decide I'll give it a try. So when using the recipe, I follow the directions as written. That's what recipes are for. My wife, on the other hand, believes that recipes are more like signposts, designed to point you in the right direction, but then you can just willy-nilly guess and gamble on amounts. But this is folly. Recipes are thus and so for a reason, and to stray from them is paramount to courting disaster. So often you'll find me in my kitchen, crouched over my phone or my tablet, reading a recipe, making sure I have all the ingredients gathered, making sure I have my measuring spoons and my measuring cups to assemble this new delicacy. And sometimes it goes according to plan. Perfectly assembled, I sample the new morsel to see that I have found a new favorite, or perhaps just a good attempt at something I haven't tried before. But sometimes, sometimes I get distracted. Has this ever happened to you? You're looking at your recipe, and it says an ingredient. Let's say salt. It says salt, 3 tablespoons. And somewhere in the back of my hairy gray matter, a small warning light goes off, saying, that seems like a lot of salt. However, I am a recipe follower. The recipe says 3 tablespoons, capital T, that's the abbreviation for tablespoons, capital T, 3 tablespoons of salt. So I disregard the warning light, I scoop my 3 tablespoons of salt in, stir them in, and then I go to the next ingredient on the recipe. It says it needs 3 tablespoons, capital T, of oil. Well, that's interesting. Why would it need exactly the same amount of salt as it does oil? So my eyes drift back up to salt, where miraculously the recipe is now changed. And it only calls for 1/2 teaspoon of salt. Now we have a problem. Anybody know how many teaspoons are in a tablespoon?
Three.
3 teaspoons in a tablespoon. It calls for 1/2 teaspoon. And I have put in 3 tablespoons. I have put in 9 times the amount of salt this particular recipe calls for. Poop. Because here's the truth about salt. We love it. We love salt. If it was socially acceptable to have a salt lick on your table, don't tell me you wouldn't. There's every once in a while walk by and go, oh, that's good stuff. I like that. Wow. We love salt. But just like when I was talking to the kids about on popcorn, if you put too much on, it ruins the food, doesn't it? Think of a big sun-ripened beefsteak tomato, right? Right, late July, early August, big and full and ripe and red, and you slice it up into those thick slices, right? And you have it out on your your summer dining table with the corn on the cob and the juicy hamburger and the homemade potato salad. And right before you dig into this garden delight, what do? You sprinkle a little salt across the top of it, don't you? Just a little, not much, just a dash. Just a dash of salt on it. What does that do to the tomato? It brings that flavor out, right? I mean, it was good before, but now it's so good. Just a little bit of salt. Now imagine that same situation, that big juicy tomato sitting there and you want it so bad and you grab the salt shaker and go to put your dash of salt on and somebody has unscrewed the lid and all of it comes out. Well, you can't eat it now. It's inedible. There's too much, all that salt. Oh, it's awful. It's awful. In the same way, my recipe is ruined. I've added 9 times the salt I was supposed to put in it. Unless I have the other ingredients to increase said recipe 9 times, which means I'm going to be eating it for every meal for the next 2 weeks, I got to start over. I've put too much in. That's the thing with salt. It's great. It helps so much, but it just takes a little. Jesus calls us to be the salt of the earth, instructing us to bring a little flavor, a little help into the world. You are the salt of the earth, he says. You are the light of the world. You know, the thing with both salt and light is you don't need very much to make a difference. Just a little salt changes the taste of food. Just a little light breaks the darkest darkness. He goes on to say, "For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." Unless your righteousness exceeds that of the leaders of the temple, the scribes and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. That's a curious bar to set for our righteousness. Because here's the thing. Jesus didn't think the scribes and Pharisees were righteous at all. He'd been railing against them from the very beginning. John famously referred to scribes and Pharisees as dens of vipers. Jesus had been teaching against them and preaching against them for some time. And yet they're who he uses to set the bar on your righteousness, on your faithfulness. They are the measuring stick for entering heaven that he gives us. You want to get in? You want to be on God's good side? Do better than these two groups who don't do anything at all. That doesn't take a monumental effort. It just takes a little something. Anything. Be the salt. But don't overwhelm when helping. Don't overshadow when adding flavor. Make things better. Just a little better makes a huge difference in life. Don't try to do it all. Don't try to flood life. Do it naturally. Gently. Just sprinkle it in and watch how it improves your daily experience. Isaiah is saying much the same thing, talking to the same people, speaking to religious, pious people who are steadfastly committed to the routine of faith. He says you're ruining it with your saltiness. He calls out the people's actions as rebellion against God. Day after day, he says, they seek me and delight to know my ways as if they were a nation that practiced righteousness, did not forsake the ordinance of God. Why do we fast, but you do not see? Why humble ourselves, but you do not notice? Look, you serve your own interest on your fast day. You fast only to quarrel and to fight and to strike with a wicked fist. Such fasting as you do today will not make your voice heard on high. Fasting was meant to draw one closer to God, to focus oneself on God's providence and presence all around us. Fasting removes many of the daily impediments to feeling the omnipresence of the Almighty. Fasting focuses the senses and heightens the experience. It's meant to humble and clarify. But the people Isaiah is speaking to have begun to use fasting as a measuring stick of faith to lift themselves up to a position of honor and respect. Well, I fasted for 5 days. Well, I fasted for 10, for 20, for 30. Look at how gaunt I am. Withdrawn I look. Surely I am the most faithful, the most pious, the most religious of us all. But that was not the point of fasting. Fasting was meant to humble us before God, recognizing God's hand in providing even our daily bread. It was meant to inspire thanksgiving and generosity, compassion and charity. But the people have perverted it. They've made it something it was never meant to be. They have taken the lid off their spiritual salt shaker and dumped the whole mess into their faith, and it's too much. It overwhelms the act. It makes it wrong. Isaiah asks, "Is such a fast that I choose? Will you call this a fast? A day acceptable to the Lord?" And then he describes what God really wants from his faithful followers. Is not this the fast that I choose, to loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, bring the homeless poor into your house, when you see the naked to cover them and not to hide yourself from your own kin? You've been focusing on the wrong thing, Isaiah says, dumping your saltiness all over the table. You've ruined the meal. Step back. Start over. Just a sprinkle. Do something small to change the world. Just a pinch of salt. These are the things that actually matter to God. Breaking injustice, letting the oppressed go free, sharing your bread with the hungry, opening your home to the homeless, covering the naked. Your pious oversalting is exactly what the Pharisees and the scribes will later do. Their oversalty, self-focused, self-serving faith will lead them to reject Jesus. Be better than that. Do something. There was an old man once sitting on the beach, and he saw this young boy walking by. The tide had just recently rolled out, and it had left many treasures on the beach. The young boy was walking along, sifting through the seaweed. And every once in a while, he would find a starfish. He would pick the starfish up, and he would pull the seaweed off of it, and he would look at it for a moment, and then he would wing it back out into the ocean. The old man watched as the young boy came down the beach, stopping every once in a while to find another starfish. When he got down to where the old man was, the old man says, "What exactly are you doing?" Little boy says, "I'm saving them. I'm putting them back in the ocean so they can live." The old man looked down the several miles of beach he could see, and he could see that the tide had strewn its litter for miles. There must be hundreds of starfish along that beach. He looked at the boy and he said, "Well, that's just silly. You'll never save them all. What difference does it make?" The boy stood there for a moment, picking the seaweed off the starfish he had just picked up. He looked at the old man and he said, "It makes a difference to this one. It doesn't have to be huge. It doesn't have to be monumental. Something small, just a sprinkle of salt into the world, makes a difference. I know it seems horrible sometimes. It seems impossible. We look out at a world full of confusion and chaos and consternation, and we think to ourselves, I can't fix it all. And it becomes overwhelming, and we say, you know what? If I can't fix it all, I'm not going to fix any of it. We get discouraged and frustrated and scared. But we don't have to fix it all. Jesus fixes it all. We simply have to be the difference for someone today. Be better than the scribes and the Pharisees by doing just a little. Add your flavor to someone's life. Shine your light into a dark corner. I talked to a young couple this week in their early 20s. They were needing somebody to officiate their wedding. They had talked to several ministers and were having trouble finding anybody. There was a problem. She was Catholic and he was Muslim. And they couldn't find a minister that would marry the both of them, not without somebody converting. They came to me. I must have been the 10th or 12th person they'd talked to. And you could hear the dejection in their voice. They're like, we're just looking for someone to do our wedding. And, you know, we want to respect everybody that's there. We just want, can you help us? They fully expected me to say no. They didn't know me. But I said, yeah, I've done weddings for folks of different faiths before. I said, that's not a problem. I can help you. And the sound of that burden being lifted from them was like a literal weight had been pulled off of them. This was not something big that I do. I do 30 weddings a year. To be quite honest with you, it doesn't take me long to get ready for a wedding. I put it together. I show up. I do my part, which doesn't take very long. I congratulate everybody and I leave. It's a simple thing. It is not going to change the world. But it makes a difference to them. We don't have to have all the answers. We don't have to be perfect. That isn't the bar that Jesus set. But we have to do something. The other end of the extreme, of course, is when you don't add any salt into the recipe when it calls for it, when you forget that step or skip over it, and the recipe comes out bland or tasteless or uninspiring. Add your salt today. Not in overwhelming acts of self-emulating faith routine, but in the simple acts that are the sprinkle of God's kingdom. Do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with God. And when you do, Isaiah says, then your light shall break forth like the dawn. Your healing shall spring up quickly. Your vindicator shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call and the Lord will answer. You shall cry for help. And God will say, here I am. Amen.